Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Support for Armchair and the Saints Happy Hour podcast comes from Manscaped, who is number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. Their Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't nick or snag your nuts. Manscaping accidents are finally a thing of the past. And don't use the same trimmer on your face as you using on your balls. That's just nasty. Manscaped also has the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code ARMCHAIR at manscaped.com. Always use the right tools for the job. Your balls will thank you. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code ARMCHAIR at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code ARMCHAIR. All right, everybody. Welcome to a special Friday edition of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. We're not going to do the gambling show this week because I have prior engagements tonight. And so does Andrew. But we got something better for you. We have the one, the only, Nick Underhill is joining us. Nick, thanks for joining us. How did you like the new airport? You were in New Orleans this weekend.
Well, first of all, I'm not going to be able to match your energy. That's a lot of energy. I'm not going to be able to
That's a lot of energy.
It is.
He's excited to have you, Nick.
I am.
Hey, I'll take it. The airport was pretty nice. You know, I'm not going to lie. Like, I feel like a New Orleans person right now, because like I'm about to bitch about the newer, nicer thing, but like I like the old little dumpy airport that was easy to get in and out of and get through security in like 2.5 minutes. You know, this one's, it's nice. Like, if you had to spend some time there, I guess it's a little better. Maybe they'll get some more connecting flights through there or something. I don't know what the plan is. If that's the case, you know, that's great. It's good to be able to eat somewhere other than Subway if you get there too early too, but yeah, I just like the old one.
You are officially an honorary New Orleanian now. You're complaining
about. I feel like he's one of those guys where, like, after 25 years of driving in potholes, the road finally gets paved, and that's like that person from New Orleans that'll complain about the road being better.
No, that's not me at all. It's just the airport. it was hard to get in and out of. I got yelled at by a cop for jaywalking. It was just like a whole thing. Like, my whole experience there was not positive.
Nick, so you were in town, man, and I got to say, you successfully avoided me for years at the Greenbrier, and you missed me in Champion Square. Sorry, I blanked for a second. You missed me in Champion Square by mere seconds. I was hanging out with Ramon Vargas, and you were hanging out with him, I think, like 5 minutes before that, so... Congratulations on successfully avoiding me yet again.
So here's the key question, Nick. You're in town. You're friends with Ramon. Did he rope you in to go and protect him while he investigated some heinous crime or talked to a potential murderer? Did you have to do that for him this weekend?
No, there were like no murder watches this time. You know, in the past he has done that. There was one time I had to sit there while he interviewed a guy that was like, I think he was eventually convicted of like murdering his father or something like that. And he had me sitting back in the cut watching over him to make sure he didn't get killed during the interview. But no, this time he kind of just let me come in, and you know, there was no murderous activities. Just we had a lunch at Nacho Mama's and that was about it. So it was a little bit safer.
My favorite part about Ramon is no matter what happens his entire life, they could have a meteor announce that it's going to hit the earth, and the paper will be like, Ramon, we need you to cover the Saints' reaction to it. Like, he is never going to escape covering the Saints ever.
I think he seeks that out though a little bit too. I think he likes staying in the mix a little bit, but you know, there's just always like a little bit of a, like a frantic vibe around Ramon. And I'm sure Andrew picked up on that a little bit. That's just, you know, his general way of being. So if there is a meteor coming, I think that's what, like, when Ramon's at his happiest and, you know, the frazzled hair and everything, it all fits together when things aren't going well.
So you got Nick, how much do you miss New Orleans, man? Like, I don't even know, like, the stuff you tell me, I don't even know how much of it I'm permitted to say on this podcast. But I guess, like, I'll phrase it like this. I'll ask it like this. Everyone keeps asking, when are you coming back, Nick? Everyone on Saints Twitter is desperate to have you back. Is there any chance this could ever happen?
Oh, I mean, you never say never to anything. You know, I'm on a contract right now. So, you know, there's things that, you know, I got to fulfill. And then, you know, I'm not unhappy where I'm at. I guess, you know, you gotta work where you can work. If there's, you know, if nobody's giving you a job, you got to work where you got to work. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I can't close the door on anything. You never know, like, what's going to happen, or, you know, maybe John George's decides to, you know, drop that some of that $1 billion on me or something. I don't know. So, I mean, I won't say no to anything, but, you know, it is what it is. I'm where I'm at right now.
Why can't
in between the lines right there?
Why can't the Advocate make you a vanity site like SI did for Peter King? And it can be Nick, it can be Advocate / Nick's Place. And we all go.
You know, I don't think they're spending the money on that. So, they, you know, we aren't doing that. I mean, if you guys want to pay me to come start a website, I'll come start a website. You know, I know Jude comes from some family money, so maybe he can dip in there. Maybe you guys can start pressuring him. I don't know. But, you know, the Athletics, you know, they're good to me. They pay well. You know, we got freedom to kind of do the stuff we want to do. It's just, you know, it's just a different environment a little bit, you know. I guess I would describe the Saints and being around the Saints more of like a family business. And, you know, the Patriots are very much that like corporate culture. So it's not even like, you know, a comparison of the companies. It's just, you know, covering the teams is different. And I knew what I was getting into when I came up here. I guess it's maybe a little bit of a different feel just from before. You know, I think that some things around the Patriots and just the atmosphere and the coverage and how the coverage is received has changed given how many Super Bowls they've won since I left. So, I mean, there's an element of like, you know, the left tackle's hurt and you write about the replacement left tackle being bad and you'll have 500 people coming at you like, oh, well, they're still going to win the Super Bowl. And it's like, yeah, they probably are still going to win the Super Bowl, but the left tackle still sucks you right now until the other one comes back from IR. So,
don't
I mean,
slander
just,
Marsh. Don't slander Newhouse like that just because he couldn't make the Saints, man.
I'm surprised you even knew who their left tackle was.
he was with the Saints in training camp.
That's all I knew.
Okay. Well, then you know. So I don't know. I don't know what point I was making, but it's just a little bit different. You know, like Saints fans, like they want to know everything and they care about everything and they consume everything. And like the Saints matter so much. And, you know, you guys do your podcast. I used to write about them, do a podcast. Like when people care about everything you're saying, it's nice. You know, it's nice to feel like what you're doing, you know, has a major impact. And, you know, I'm sure there's still impact up here. It's just a different type of impact. And it's just kind of like everything's on pause until like really the Super Bowl. And it's just kind of been a little bit weird, you know, going through that. But, you know, I think it covering a team that's very successful also brings more eyes on what you're doing, and it just increases the market size and creates opportunities. And, you know, I think that's the trade-off. So there's a little bit of give and take with that.
So, well, I'm glad you brought up the Saints because that is what this podcast is about. And so we probably should talk about that.
Nick, you got to experience the game Sunday.
Yeah.
As a fan, which changed your perspective on the Superdome as a place to view a football game, but also, what the hell happened Sunday?
Yeah, that was terrible. The people behind me were like screaming the whole time, like about an engagement party and like that ruined the game. I don't think that's the case. You know, I think a person can get engaged and, you know, still focus on their job throughout the week. And, you know, we all go through things in our lives throughout the week and still perform at our jobs. I just think that they kind of came out flat and, you know, it just looked bad from start to finish. You know, I don't want to make too much out of one game. You know, I do still watch all their games, though. And I do think that, you know, the weaponry beyond Mike Thomas is a little bit of a problem. You know, is it enough to stop them from getting to where they want to go? No, probably not. And they can find a way around it. You know, the weapons were essentially, you know, the same last year, and they were one, you know, bad call away from making the Super Bowl. So there's no reason that, you know, they still can't get there with what they got. But if they would have made a move for somebody else, I think that it becomes a little bit clearer to make that projection of them being in that game. You know, like if they go against a team like, you know, Dallas or even the Patriots, who have a cornerback like Gilmore, who, you know, has the ability to match Mike Thomas's physicality and maybe defend him more one-on-one than a lot of other guys in the league, then, you know, that's kind of a scarier proposition in the Super Bowl. And there's probably only a few guys in the whole league that can do that. But if you meet one of those cornerbacks and now you're up against them, you could run into those issues. So, I mean, that was the main thing that I saw, you know, in that game. And it was a reminder of just how thin it gets. You know, you're throwing passes to Tre'Quan Smith and he made the one really good catch, but, you know, I don't think he's a reliable target. You know, it looks like Ted Ginn's continues to slow down pretty much like every week. You know, it just, you know, he's on the backside. He can still make some plays, but I just don't think that's somebody that you want to be throwing a, you know, a third down pass to with the season on the line. And it's possible they end up in that situation. So I think it was just a bad game in this one. Still think, you know, that they would be my pick to get to the Super Bowl in the NFC, regardless of one game. I don't think anyone should make too much out of it. But there are some, you know, underlying issues that I think they need to continue to work on sorting out as, you know, they make that push.
Nick, so expanding on what you just said, Ralph and I did a podcast where we kind of talked about the offense, and I'll summarize my statement, and I'd love to get your reaction to it. And you didn't necessarily cover maybe the peak era of this offense, you know, where 2009, 2011, where you weren't quite in New Orleans yet. When we call that era of the Sean Payton offense like the Death Star offense, where basically down and distance didn't matter. And even if it was third and 12, third and 17, they could still convert those plays because they just had so much playmaking, whether it was Reggie Bush or Darren Sproles, Jimmy Graham, even kind of the second and third tier options with Meacham and Devery Henderson. I mean, those guys could, Lance Moore, those guys could all make plays. Whereas now I made the statement that I feel like first and second down are more magnified than ever. And having success on those downs can be a 3-yard run, a 4-yard run, which makes third manageable, whether it's third and two, third and four, a manageable distance, because this offense can't win the one-on-one matchups anymore. And so third and eight, third and 12, those are non-starters. And honestly, those are non-starters for most NFL offenses. But I believe that to be now true for the Saints. And so, you know, when you look at these plays where Sean Payton schemes a 20-yard gain for Josh Hill, you know, he's not going to win a one-on-one matchup. But if you get these manageable distances, he can create plays like that for guys like that. So do you think it's fair to say that right now for the Saints, first and second down is more magnified for this offense than ever for them to be successful?
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying in the premise back in the day that they used to probably have better weapons and were able to win more of those matchups and get open, you know, no matter the situation. I'd argue, though, that first and second down has probably always been extremely important. And, you know, those third and longs were probably still, you know, considerably lower percentage plays, even if they were a higher percentage play for them than other teams. I doubt that, like, they were better than 45% on, like, third and nine and long or something like that, you know, and beyond. But, you know, you'd have to look that up. I could be way off and just saying whatever. But, yeah, I mean, definitely when you're got, you know, two guys essentially in your offense, you know, Mike Thomas and Alvin Kamara, and it's a bunch of other, you know, random guys, and maybe one of them springs open, but you don't want to be throwing the ball to Ted Ginn when there's like a defender within 1 yard of him, you know, going over the middle, or definitely not Tre'Quan Smith. And maybe Jared Cook has some potential. You know, he got a lot of yards in this game, but, you know, the yards he was getting, a high percentage of them are in that 4-minute offense where it's almost like cheating for a tight end in Sean Payton's offense. Kobe Flinner used to rack up yards there. Ben Watson racked up yards there. And then you know, Dan Arnold did last year when he took over for Watson in those four-minute situations. And then, you know, Watson's yardage plummeted. And I don't really think that Watson fell off or anything like that last year. It's just he wasn't getting those situations where, like, really it is like cheating. It's just the tight ends are so open in those situations. And, you know, if he continues to develop, though, and you can count on Cook to make some tough catches, you know, contested plays, maybe win a one-on-one matchup, you know, when it's a safety on him or something like that, then that's going to open things up, you know, just a little bit more. And maybe just that little bit more of an opening is all they need, you know, come late January, February, when, you know, things are tough. But without that, it's just scary knowing that, like, Mike's so much of the offense. Alvin's been getting banged up, and it's been a little bit weird for a couple of weeks now with him. Last week's running game, like, I don't even know where it was. That was kind of bizarre to me too. I thought Alvin looked okay on a couple of early runs, and then it's like they just kind of went away from it. So again, I don't want to put too much in that Falcons game because I just think it's an outlier, and you could probably just throw it out and move on. But yeah, I mean, you know, comparably speaking, though, if you're going back to the golden days of the offense to now, it's a lot different, even though Mike is far and away, you know, individually the best player on any of those teams. But collectively, yeah, I mean, once you get beyond one, like, there's a significant drop off if you're trying to compare, you know, Traquan to whoever the number, you know, Jimmy Graham would have been the number two guy back then as far as the receiver. So, yeah, I mean, it's considerably different.
You know, Nick, the trade deadline has passed, and look, you don't want to go over it too much, but I do have a sense, and you're still plugged into the Saints, so tell me if I'm wrong. I do have the sense that, you know, last year they wanted a corner. After Baltimore, it sort of became, we got to get one. But the cornerback market last year, it sort of stayed reasonable, right? The prices didn't get out of hand, and they said, hey, we'll get Eli Apple for a fourth, and they got it done. I feel like this year the Saints probably really wanted a receiver, but the receiver market for trades, it kind of got bonkers, where Sanu got Atlanta a second round pick, Sanders from Denver, he got Denver a third and a fourth round pick. Did the Saints aggressively go for a wide receiver, and did the market just kind of get out of their sort of asset range that they had to make a move?
I don't know if aggressively is the right word. I know that they were, you know, involved on some guys. You know, I was hearing some stuff about even Robbie Anderson, but then, you know, 2 days before the deadline, you know, I was told that probably wasn't going to happen. So I think that there was probably a good sense of, you know, the price tag and them not wanting to, you know, probably spend too much for, you know, the type of players that were available. But yeah, I think the Patriots kind of messed it up a little bit for everyone by what they gave up for Sanu. Now, he had 81 yards in their last game, and he's probably going to work out very well for their offense. And, you know, their second round pick is pretty much, you know, the first pick in the third round. It's really a third round pick. So, like, if you're given a third round pick, you're so far down in the draft, it's like a fourth round. So, you know, I just throwing that the raw number on their second round pick kind of makes it look different than what it is, but that does set the market for everybody. And, you know, are you giving up a second round pick for Robbie Anderson? You know, probably not. If you can get by with what you got, you can probably draft a better player in the second round next year. But, you know, it doesn't help you this year, and they really could use the help. But maybe he's, you know, not viewed as a difference maker. I think Sean has a pretty good sense of wide receivers and weapons and the guys he's going to put into his offense and how they're going to fit, how they're going to change things. And, you know, if he's not going all in for one of those guys, and I'm not trying to, you know, be, you know, default to Sean or cower to him or whatever, but, like, I just think that he has a really good sense of how guys are going to work in his offense. And if he says that, you know, a Robbie Anderson, or I don't know if the AJ Green stuff, you know, how real that was or not, but if AJ Green was, you know, another one,
five whole minutes on Twitter, it felt so real.
Well, I mean, like, the interest in general, you know, I know, like, I never heard him say it, but I read on Twitter, and it wasn't even Schefter that said it, but somebody else said Schefter said it on TV that they were interested. I don't know. I never heard that myself, but if they were, whatever, if they backed out on these guys, I just got to think that, you know, Peyton was just kind of like, you know, they aren't worth it. They aren't going to help. And I kind of feel like he has a good sense of how guys are often going to work in his offense. Not always.
Well, let me give you a temperature, Nick, of what Saints Twitter is like right now. I mean, I'm sure, I know you have your fingers on the pulse of this a little bit, but we are so desperate for a receiver that we've got a lot of fans that are begging for Dez Bryant to come back. We've even had some people suggest Brandon Coleman come out of retirement. We've got people excited about Keith Kirkwood coming back from IR. So does that make you maybe second guess how much you miss New Orleans?
Hey, man, that Dez Bryant week was like the weirdest week I've ever covered in my life. So, you know, if he came back and actually played in the game and did something, that'd be kind of cool to see what he could do, because I was eager to see what he could do in the offense. You know, I thought Kirkwood had some potential. I don't know if it's game-changing potential, but
it's not.
You know, Brandon Coleman, I think, had a pretty significant injury, and I don't know if he's better or not. You know, the thing is that they've never replaced Willie Snead. You can go back to that, and, you know, I hate to say it, but I feel like they gave up on him a little bit too prematurely. He came back out of shape. They basically told him he was, you know, just going to be a role player in the offense, and that's what they stuck with going throughout the whole year, even after, you know, Willie had the DUI, he came back, he was hurt, out of shape. A lot of strikes there. They never gave him a chance to overcome that. You know, by the end of the year, he was back in shape and ready to contribute, but, you know, I think the damage had been done, and they were done with him, and, you know, come the playoffs, they still needed him on a third down there. But, you know, it's just unfortunate because he's kind of the guy, like the guy that they're missing. If you could plug someone else into this offense and you didn't want to have a high paid wide receiver, somebody that could come in, you know, exploit some zones, have some chemistry with Drew right away, it's Willie Snead. But, you know, he's not coming back, and they just have not found that guy to take his place.
Andrew, you forgot two names. You forgot Emmanuel Butler and the track star from LSU, Sirius Gray. People want them back too.
Oh, Grayson?
Yeah.
Cyril Grayson?
Yeah, Cyril Grayson.
Yeah, no, there's a couple training camp heroes that absolutely the Saints are pining for at this point.
Yeah, I know, Nick. I know Nick misses good? Those days when we obsess over a Saints player because they have two good mini camp practices and start out the first week of training camp looking good, and we declare them a 50-catch wide receiver and the answer to all the offensive problems. You missed that, right, Nick? Like the end of July, the annual, who's going to be a training camp star? You missed that.
The R.J. Harris summer camp superstar award.
Yeah, you know, like, it might be a good thing that you weren't here, because Emmanuel Butler might have made you look bad. Actually, Nick, because
dude, I was getting texts about him from legitimate people, you know, like people in the organization were like super excited about him the first couple weeks of camp, and then it was just like, what happened to Emmanuel Butler? Like, is he actually good? Where'd he go? So, I mean, it wasn't just the media, it wasn't just fans, like people connected to the team, like thought they really had something.
Well, Nick, hypothetically here, and I especially on the heels of losing to the Falcons as badly as the Saints just did, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but this hypothetical scenario where the Saints play the Patriots in the Super Bowl, do the Saints have enough to compete against that team?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. I just did another podcast recently, and, you know, I said if they played 10 times, like, I think and honestly, this isn't just like a ride and defense answer, but it is a 100% ride and defense answer. Like, I think it would go 5-5, like, just honestly. And just really, I think it comes down to if they were to play, like, who has the best plan. You got the defensive genius, the offensive genius. You know, if Sean schemes the hell out of a game, like, I think they could beat him. You know, last year, I think 100% the Saints would have beat the Patriots. I think the Patriots have gotten a little bit better. I think their defense is playing better. They kind of got, you know, some guys in better positions to succeed. They got, you know, Dont'a Hightower in more of a blitzing role. And I think that's kind of helped him as he's lost a little bit of range. They brought Jamie Collins back for, you know, pennies on the dollar, and he looks like a defensive player of the year candidate. So, I mean, they've done things to get better that I think would, you know, make it a little bit harder on the Saints. You know, Collins, he has the range to kind of, you know, sort of like going back to that Dallas game last year with their linebackers and how rangy they were. And, you know, they were able to kind of keep Alvin in check on first and second down. So I think they got some of the guys to do that. And then, you know, their defensive backs are deep enough that they could bring one out to kind of, you know, match up with him on third downs or passing situations and kind of approach it in a very similar way. So I think just those little changes have from last year to this year have made this a tougher game, you know, if they were to play each other for the Saints. But yeah, I mean, I just really, like, if Sean can find a way to, you know, still get Mike open against Gilmore, and then just get enough out of the other receivers, like, I definitely think the Saints could win that game. I do. I mean, their defense looks really good, you know, as long as once Lattimore gets healthy and he gets back. And, you know, it's not like the Patriots are super stacked on offense either. You know, they got Edelman. Sanu looks okay. After that, there's really nothing there. Their running game has been terrible all season long. So I think defensively, you know, the Saints wouldn't have too many issues against these guys. It's just, you know, it's the Saints offense versus Pat's defense. And, you know, it'd probably be a close game, you know, and just whoever comes out on top, you know, in that battle of wits, I think would win the game. I think it's that close.
Yeah. Guys, I want to tell you, Nick came on this podcast. It's free because of our friends over at Blue Chew. That's blue, like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work in giving you a boner. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, and you can be ready whenever the opportunity arrives. Right now, we've got a special offer for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your free shipment. That's free. Use the promo code ARMCHAIR. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code ARMCHAIR. It's free. Do it. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice. And we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. Nick, why is the offensive line for the Saints so wildly inconsistent? I feel like they've been in the nine games, they've looked great six times pretty much, but the three bad games, they looked atrocious. Like,
and it's, well, I'll color that a little more. It's not like the opponent doesn't matter. Like, they have stonewalled Khalil Mack, they have stonewalled JJ Watt. So it's not even the quality of the opponent that matters. It's totally haphazard.
We're just going to move right past the boner read like nothing happened.
Nick, you haven't even the beginning of this podcast, we have a taped Manscaped ad to make sure people's balls are clean and
so
smell
you
nice.
got it covered from start to finish, the whole
start
process.
To finish. Nick, we have, in the history of this podcast, we have only turned down one ad, and it was a guns rights manifesto lunatic who had a novel and wanted to promote it on the podcast, and we told him no.
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
we
strongly
considered it.
We draw the line at a possible tin Unabomber ad.
Well, let me just ask you guys. We're talking the offensive line. You know, there was the report yesterday about the broken arm, and they said Pete was a Pro Bowl player this year. Is Pete a Pro Bowl player this year?
Well, he's interesting. So, you know, Nick, I'm back to doing the player grades, which you used to read, which was a huge shock to me. Flattering shock, but so I have paid closer attention this year, and I have graded Pete out, and it's kind of similar to what Ralph was just saying. He's had five or six exceptional games, and then three games where he was real shaky, and it stands out. And I think the fans, you know, offensive line is a hard thing to grade, but I think when fans, they see one bad play, and especially on the offensive line, it stands out, and you're like, oh my God, he sucks. But I will tell you, just from watching the Saints a lot this year and watching the tape, they have this run, and you probably remember this play. It's one of their favorite runs where, especially in short yardage situations, they'll basically have the fullback, Zach Line, and maybe the tight end from the other side of the field cut pursuit. So they'll come back, swing towards the pursuit, and Andres Pete will pull from left guard and go inside the center and right guard gap, and basically pull and then be the lead blocker for the halfback. And the Saints have gone to that play in short yardage in critical situations where they needed a good run many times this season, and it's almost always worked. So I don't know that it's fair to say he's had a Pro Bowl season, but I just know from seeing the Saints offense and watching what they do, when it's money time and they need a big yard, a lot of times they're trusting Andres Pete to get it.
Look, I never thought he sucked. I feel like he kind of takes a little bit of too much crap from the fan base. He's kind of like a default whipping boy, so to speak. I don't know. Just like somebody they like to hammer just for
Zach Street was about, one of those guys.
Yeah, he was. And look, I think Pete's a good, solid players. Somebody's probably going to overpay him. I hope it's not the Saints just because they've had him around long enough and they should probably know what he's worth. So he's going to get paid a lot and probably go somewhere and not live up to that contract. But through the money he's being paid right now, I think that he's probably, you know, as good as it gets dollar for dollar, you know, looking around the league. There's probably some guys that are a little bit better, you know, on lower contracts, but I don't think they should have any complaints at all about what they're getting out of him. I would just, you know, beware if the price tag for him, you know, gets beyond just a good guard. Like, somebody's probably going to pay him to be a tackle. Yeah. And, you know, good for him. Go get that money. Go do it and be fine at your job. But, you know, let somebody else overpay him. You know, that would just be my only thing with him. But I think for what they're getting right now, he's fine. He's solid. Well,
I'm sad about Andres Pete breaking his arm, but I'm also kind of secretly excited because it allows me to play this sound effect over and over again. Because it's Will Clapp time. But that's an interesting thing, Nick. You talk about letting Pete leave. They have a lot of guys that they're going to have to pay starting. Like, this is sort of this year's – I look at it as like the window closes, right? Because now they have to make decision on a bunch of guys. When you look at the guys that are free agents next year, Von Bell, Onyemata, and Andrew, I think I'm forgetting one more.
Andres Pete.
Who would you say – if you think Andres Pete's going to go – Von Bell, Onyemata, if they're only able to keep one of them, who do you think would be priority?
It's so hard to talk about the Saints' salary cap and who they're going to keep because they just do things that nobody else does that defies logic until it happens. And then everybody starts, you know, like, they got killed for like the Drew Brees ghost year contract and it's all these jokes and everything. And then, you know, the Patriots go ahead and put it in the Tom Brady's contract. And, you know, everybody's real quiet because, you know, it's the Patriots.
Math spreads from team to team.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we're looking at it like a normal thing, like, there is a reality where people price out and they run out of money. And you know, the salary cap is this thing that actually sets a cap on what you can spend. You know, you got to start making hard decisions. I don't think Onyemata is going to cost a ton to keep. You know, if you can get him back, I would keep him just because, but, you know, I would definitely set a price point on him and not be willing to go too far beyond it. You know, Von Bell is kind of the surprising one where it gets hard because he's really played well, I feel like, the last 2 years. And it's funny, last year he was kind of really the only guy that had anything to prove in that secondary. And I feel like a lot of them came in, you know, loafing and took the offseason real easy and thought the NFL was real easy and success was going to be, you know, guaranteed. And then, you know, Lattimore came out and literally fell on his face in week one. Marcus Williams, you know, didn't have the season that he was supposed to have. And, you know, here's Kurt Coleman trying to take Von Bell's job. And Von Bell had to, you know, really work to kind of preserve his job and, you know, window to make money and get that good second contract. And I think, I don't know if it's going to be from the Saints or somebody else, but, like, I do think he's going to get paid pretty well, you know, when he hits the market. You know, the question is did they draft a guy that can replace him? And is the value there? Do you want to pay him and, you know, keep the three safeties, or, you know, did you draft this guy because you see the end of the line and you're going to cycle him out? You know, if you have to start making hard decisions and you're looking down the road to, you know, who you got to sign, you know, year two, year three, maybe he's somebody where you cut the cost and rely on your drafting and save that money for, you know, Alvin or whoever else, you know,
and the safety
Ramchak,
market,
you know, some of these other guys.
And the safety market got weird because 2 years ago, the Saints paid Kurt Coleman ahead of free agency and he got one of the better deals because nobody paid safeties. And last year, everybody was paying safeties. So it's just, it's hard to predict, like you say.
Yeah.
So we're tight on time, Nick, and you're a professional. We're a couple clowns. Well, that's not fair, actually. Ralph, he does an article for WWL, so he's like semi-legit. I'm a clown. You're a professional, so you don't want to take up too much of your time. But
Nick, they
put me on
TV every week.
That's right.
Can you believe that?
It's true. I've seen it with my own eyes.
Eventually, I'll learn how to look into the camera.
I can't let you out of here, Nick, without talking about Teddy Bridgewater. I just real – are you a believer?
A believer of what?
I guess the way I would phrase the question is, are you a believer that he can be or should be the quarterback of the future for the Saints?
And is he going to get an offer from another? Is another team going to be like, hey, Teddy, come here. We got 3 years, $45 million for you next March.
Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. I mean, like, you know, if Drew were to retire after the season and you got Teddy in the building, like, I think you have to re-sign him and keep him. But, like, the surefire guy of the future, no. Like, even if you did keep him, I would advocate, you know, say Drew leaves, they keep Teddy. I would advocate drafting a quarterback right away and just continuing to do so. Because, I feel like, at best, he's probably, like, a top 20 guy, you know. And in the right system, this system, you know, the right guys around him, I think he's a guy, if everything goes right, yeah, you can win a Super Bowl with him. But at the same time, you know, I think he's probably right around that Nick Foles level of player where, you know, if he's your guy, he's your guy, and you build an offense around him and you try to win games and, you know, maybe you have some success, but, like, you're always going to want a little bit something more out of that position. So, you know, if they're in a situation where, you know, Drew is gone, yeah, you got to keep him. But if, you know, Breeze is sticking around for another year or two, you know, and you kind of have that conversation with him and you get a little bit of an idea for his outline, I don't think that you force Breeze out to go to him or that you overextend to keep Bridgewater in. You know, I think that you'd probably be fine moving on, getting the third round pick, drafting another guy. And
okay, but let's say, let's say Breeze stays, though.
Let him go.
You do think there would be a team? So because you mentioned his ceiling maybe is like a Nick Foles. Well, Nick Foles just got an enormous contract this offseason. Now I realize he had some playoff success. He won a Super Bowl, so that's a little different. But you think a team will pay huge money for Teddy Bridgewater this offseason?
Yeah, I do. I think he's going to make probably a decent amount of money. Case Keenum just got paid, you know, a pretty good amount. So I mean, if like Teddy was somewhere in that like. I'm probably going to be way off on this projection, but if he's like, you know, somewhere in that 17, 18, 19, $20 million range, it really wouldn't surprise me all that much.
Brian Pace is totally going to pay him a ridiculous amount of money. That's my prediction. And it's going to, he's going to do the Loomis math. So it'll be like $8 against the Bears cap.
There you go.
So Nick, before we get you out of here, what's your first meal you had when you landed back in New Orleans? Over the weekend,
the first one I had, I went straight to Izzo's. That's my spot. That Mexican rice is just different than anything else in the world. And then my other like favorite place, I don't know if it's okay to say this because they had some weird stuff go on with, you know, all the restaurant scandal stuff. But like I'm I don't know what's okay or not. But like I go to Johnny Sanchez. Like that's one of my favorite spots there. So. You know, I'm still eating there. I don't know if that's morally wrong or not. I don't know. I don't know what the stance is. I don't know if like it's still the same ownership or what. So, you know, for a while we stayed away, but you know, I left and came back and I had to have it.
And how was it? Did it live up?
Oh, it was fantastic. It's always good.
So, what's the latest pair of sneakers that you've purchased?
I got a pair of Sauconis that they sneaker politics. It's a Louisiana sneaker store there. They collaborated with them and Cafe du Monde to put out like a shoe that looks like a beignet. So that was the last pair I bought.
I listened to Jesus is King. It made my ears bleed, Nick. Am I wrong for feeling that way? By Kanye.
Look, I'm a Jesus fan, but I don't need a lot of scripture in my music. So, you know, there was some stuff, a couple songs that I thought sounded okay, but overall, you know, I listened to it maybe once the first day through and then a couple songs, you know, day two and three. And then since then, like it just has not come back.
If you want,
I think this is the first time in the history of our lives that Nick and I agree on a music take. That's impressive.
Kids, if you want to listen to cool gospel music, Johnny Cash is the way to go. I'm just saying. I'm just going to throw that out there. So, Nick, thanks for joining us. We are pining for you here. We know you're at the Athletic. You're great. I always one last thing in the Athletic, the little gray, the little smiley face thing at the bottom. Like, if I don't give you a good review, do they withhold money, food, or do they electric shock you? Should I always give you a high rating? I feel like if I don't, something bad is going to happen to like you or Cat Terrell. So that rating system at the bottom, it's not life or death, right?
No, they actually keep track of it. So hit the smiley face.
Done. I'm gonna click it like 6 times right after we get off.
So
yeah, hit guys, go on the private browser. Just keep logging in and clicking it.
Guys, you know where to find Nick. He's on Twitter. He's on the Athletic. You should subscribe, guys. He's so nice for joining us, but you should subscribe to our podcast and support us. $7 a month gets you the best Saints podcast on earth every day. So have a great weekend, guys, and we will see you on Monday.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.